Blog Talk Radio.
I was told in my past along the dark sea when I muttered, but along the cables and lands with a high and discovered load. If you're going to with a bottom line, with me you can drive. So I climbed the piece of heaven, but I cut it down. I asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and that I said, look, but I traveled every road in the steer land.
Time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumbo Justice radio show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-9965-983. Once again, the number is 347-9965-983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumbo Justice radio show. I am Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumbo Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. Once again, it's time for an edition of Jumbo Justice radio show on Blog Talk Radio. Welcome to the show tonight. I'm your host, Keith Haley. We want to thank Hank Snow again for being able to remember more than 90 cities and states in that song. I wonder if he actually sang it without looking at the lyrics. Johnny Cash did the same song years later, but it's certainly a memory twister for sure. I want to make an announcement on next week's show. We won't be on Thursday evening, since that's Thanksgiving, so we're going to move the show date up one day, and we'll have the show on Wednesday night, November 22nd at 9 p.m. Let me tell you a little bit about the show for the first-time listeners. Our purpose on Jumbo Justice Radio is to discuss the news and the issues and events and developments and the always difficult and sometimes humorous practice of criminal justice. The show is dedicated to the tireless police and court, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who protect us throughout the United States and indeed throughout the world. I should mention something about the magic and even the mystery of Blog Talk Radio. It's certainly an exciting technology. It's leading-edge technology. And the chief executive officer of Blog Talk Radio is Alan Levy, and he's the genius behind the medium. And then just about 3 months ago, he started Blog Talk Radio with one show. There are now more than 1,600 shows on the network. Now, what is actually possible with Blog Talk Radio for those who might be interested in doing something like this themselves? Any person, any interest group, that could be from cigars to astronomy and whatever, can have their own show broadcasting live and streaming audio over the Internet worldwide to an unlimited number of listeners. And it's absolutely free, and you're permitted to broadcast 2 hours a day, so a total of something like 14 hours a week. The shows are immediately archived after the show is over, and they're available for replay, or you can download them in an MP3 file format. So it's sort of like the sales slogan on a box of Cheetos, or Cheez-Its, get your own show. You can certainly do that. Tonight's show is going to be interesting. Let me tell you something about the guest. I'll do my usual in the news and comment on a few items that's got my attention here in the last week or so relative to criminal justice. But we're going to have on Nate Pirani, who's the director of the Intervention Court and also the director of court services for Huron County, a court of common pleas and probate and juvenile court in Huron County, Ohio. We're also going to have on some more of the authors in our book talk section from the book Strange But Real, Perspectives on Odd Issues in Criminal Justice. This book should be out and available for sale starting in January. And I believe who we're going to have on tonight, Shannon Scott, who's joined us before, Ron Edwards, who in fact co-hosted our show on the Haitian prison system. And I think we're going to have Sherry Warnock on tonight and talk about perhaps torture in the hands of federal agents and government agents, that kind of thing. Then a very special guest, and I think Jim is on the line now. We're going to have Jim Fernason, and I'm going to make sure I know how to pronounce his name after I talk with him, but he's the director of the Ohio Minutemen Civil Defense Corps. And they're really in their preliminary stages in terms of getting organized, and he's told me that the Minutemen in Ohio are divided up into about six different sections of the state, but they're very interested in getting volunteers. And as some of you know, I've been very interested in the illegal immigration issue and border issues for probably 8 or 9 years now, and done some writing about it. And I think the Minutemen Project, which I visited on the border in Arizona two summers ago, is probably one of the best examples of citizen patriotism and volunteer service of the country that I've ever seen. So I'm looking forward to talking with Jim tonight and hearing what he has to say for all of our listeners tonight. Here's what you do as a listener or a caller. You listen on your computer with a Windows Media Player. Obviously, you're probably already doing that now. And you can call in by phone, and that can be a cell phone, a landline, or you can, in fact, use Skype. If people don't know, the free Skype system, you're allowed to make free telephone calls from your computer to a telephone number in the United States at least through December. And you can call computer to computer worldwide, just as you would do on something like Google Talk. So you can hear the whole show on the phone. Once you call in, you stay on the phone, you can hear the whole show. The phone number to call in again now is 347-996-5983. And at the present time, Blog Talk Radio lets us hold five calls at a time. So that means that all five people that are on my switchboard can actually talk to each other and hear the show. So that makes it convenient so that they can exchange ideas and information. Let me take a look here at a few items in the news. You know, I always like to pick up a humorous piece when I can. And since I've been to Romania so many times and some of our faculty have joined me also, here's an interesting one from Romania where the thief steals a getaway car, jumps in a getaway car, but the car's only got enough gasoline in it to go about a half mile, and he gets caught. This is a Romanian thief was arrested after his getaway car ran out of fuel just a half mile after he committed his crime. The guy's 27 years old. He steals 20,000 pounds from the front seat of a car in Bucharest, wonderful city, by the way. He jumped in the car with an accomplice, and they took off, but they ran out of gas. And one of the private security officers in Bucharest and an employee of the chemist actually caught him. I'm actually writing an article right now about the private security system in Romania, and they do a lot of things that our police do in the United States where private security here in this country wouldn't be permitted to do that. They get qualified and certified in certain types of areas, even in the area of providing police patrol in certain communities. So it's a fascinating enterprise, private security there now. Here's something that struck my fancy in the news this week. We have a city in the United States that's doing something first. They are, in fact, the first city in the United States to ban all smoking. And I mention this story because it's got certainly has something to do with the police role, as you'll see here in just a moment. Belmont, California is set to make history by becoming the first city in the nation to ban smoking on its streets and almost everywhere else. The city council voted unanimously last night to pursue a strict law that will prohibit smoking anywhere in the city except for a single-family detached residence. Smoking on the street, smoking in a park, even in one's own automobile will become illegal, and police will have the option of handing out tickets if they catch someone doing this. Amazing. The actual language of all still needs to be worked out, but it's going to happen very quickly. Councilman Dave Warden says this is a tremendous opportunity. We need to pass as stringent a law as we can. I would like to make it illegal. What if every city did this? Imagine how many lives would be saved. If we could do one little thing at this level, it will matter. Armed with growing evidence that secondhand smoke causes negative health effects, I can remember as a young boy selling pop in out of a bucket at bingo games at the Moose Lodge when I was growing up, and people would call for me and say, "Sonny, bring me a cream soda," and I had to cut through the smoke and try to find where that person was, where their voice was coming from. But anyway, this is going to happen, and he says that I would just like to say no smoking and see what happens if they do smoke, and what they're going to do is allow the police to respond to these type of calls. And remember, a week or so ago, we talked about a city that's actually allowing you to use the 911 number to report smoking violators. This is important for Ohio since December 7th. The world changes here, too, in terms of smoking in public and restaurant and other kinds of facilities. He claims that these cities that have passed ordinances restricting certain kinds of smoking, and the states that have done that, he says that's like a number 5 on the Richter scale. And he says this is going to be an 8, and we're going to make an impact. Not everybody's for it, of course. Smokers and non-smokers, they think it's an invasion of privacy, but a couple of the council members put this in the category of something like jaywalking or a barking dog, that the police can respond and they have discretion to do a number of things, even write someone a ticket if they want to do it. But I thought that was a real interesting item. Here's another one that has to do with the police role, not in this country, but in Dubai, the United Arab Emirates. Right now, this is a real hot tourist attraction because the temperature's down cool enough where you can actually walk on the sand. And I'm told that Dubai has beautiful beaches. Perhaps some of you have been there. But one of the problems they're experiencing is that about 500,000 tourists come in from all over the world during this time of year. And the beach is loaded with people in swimsuits, and particularly women, and even in bikinis and things like that as they lie out and try to catch some sun. But what's the problem is that they have hundreds and hundreds of men going up and down the beach, ogling them. Men who've never had a chance in other parts of that nation to see a woman scantily clad, such as in a bikini. So this has become a problem, and a lot of the women have complained about it. And what the men will do is they'll walk up and down the beach, and they'll act like they're taking a photograph of each other, but in fact the camera will be slightly turned, and what they're actually doing is taking pictures of women. So what happens is the police actually intercede in this, and they actually will seize the telephone from the man, the picture phone, and then they actually go and look at the picture section, and the cops are supposed to delete the pictures of women that they've taken on the beach. I was wondering if that was after they sent them to their own cell phone number, but who knows. But it's certainly an interesting role for the cops, and women have certainly complained about it, and they're saying that they'd like to go out on the beach and enjoy the sun and not have to worry about some other people. And they've even had some people expose themselves and things of that nature. But certainly a little different role for police officers than you would see here in the United States. I'm going to take one more news story and comment on it, since I did describe my article on the border fence. The Vatican Cardinal has spoken out against the fence. A senior Vatican Cardinal on Tuesday, he's condemned the building of walls between countries to keep out immigrants. And he said that Washington planned to build a fence on the U.S.-Mexican border was part of an inhuman program. And this was a part of a celebration they were having to celebrate the World Day of Migrants and Refugees. And the Cardinal says that this fence is really a bad idea. It's going to be supposedly about 700 miles And this is a move that's angered the Mexican government and certainly former President Vicente Fox. My comment about that was, if he's against it, it must be a good idea. But anyway, he says that this is a really bad idea, and most of the Mexican U.S. bishops are certainly against this idea, and they're calling it an inhuman program also. He does point out that there are a couple other fence-building projects around the world. Saudi Arabia is building a very long fence between themselves and the nation of Iraq, and then on the Palestinian border with Israel, West Bank, Gaza, they're actually building another fence also. And this has been significant, what they've done so far in terms of reducing terrorist bombing. So it's going to be interesting to see how this fence project turns out with the results of the election such as they were. I would not count on the fact that we're actually going to have a fence on the border at least soon. I think what I'm going to do right now is click on one of our listeners' call-in numbers, and I think I have this right. I'm going to click on Jim from the Hiya Minuteman Project right now and see if he can join us. Jim, are you there? We say this a lot on Blog Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hello, Jim, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Are you?
Oh, good. How's the sound coming through for you?
Oh, the sound is fine. I had to actually step away from the computer because the computer is a lot faster than this phone. So.
Right. People have told me that. I should mention that, I think, when I know people are going to call in. Well, how are you doing this evening?
I'm wonderful. Hoping the rain would leave here and bring some sun out tomorrow. So.
Yeah, that would be different. Right. I think I'm beginning to feel like I live in Seattle. It's probably even worse up here in the northwest corner of the state. Well, Jim, tell us a little bit about your project and what you're involved in and what's been going on in the developmental stages here of the Civil Defense Corps, Minuteman Civil Defense Corps for Ohio.
Okay. The Minuteman Civil Defense Corps was a project that emanated from a group of individuals who got together and wanted to make a difference by working on the border to stop the illegal immigration into the U.S., which is against the law and is a felony. And there were, I believe, three different individuals. Well, they had some issues with each other, so they separated into three separate groups. I'm out of the Arizona-based Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. Minuteman Project is Jim Gilchrist's group, and they're mostly out of Texas. So
I see.
Our group here in Ohio is a chapter of the Arizona-based Minuteman Civil Defense Corps. Several states have created chapters from the East Coast all the way through to California, North and South. Obviously, more chapters exist on the bordering states with Mexico. The Ohio chapter formed in just around August of this year.
Oh.
So we're very new to a chapter recognition. There are somewhere upwards of 60 members in the state. We have five separate regions, which is what I... in our conversation, I told you about Columbus being in the center of the state.
Yes.
And then the four different quadrants of the northeast, northwest, southeast, and southwest. Looking right now, I would like to include portions of West Virginia into the southeast section.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd like to include northern Kentucky into our southwestern group, mainly because the members in those states do not have representation right now as far as chapters.
I see.
So Ohio is a border state. It is a border state with Canada across the lake. We do not have an ongoing patrol. The New York chapter does have an actual Border Patrol boat up there from the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps of New York. That actually,
I think I saw that you had the New York director down for one of your meetings, didn't you?
Right. The when we started the chapter at the August meeting, we had that chapter in.
Jim, are you still
Log there? Talk Radio.
Jim, are you still there?
Hello.
Are you still there, Jim?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yep, I am. That's the first time it's ever happened.
Oh, okay.
They shut me off.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, anyway, I'll get back into what is happening here in Ohio. And I know that I believe that at some future date you wanted to spend a little more time.
Yes, I do.
Some of the info.
You'd like to take four or five people and take the whole hour and devote it to the
Minuteman
Project.
Well, anyway, what I'll do is I'll just I'll kind of brief everyone on what we do here.
Okay.
Since we do not have a border that is right with Mexico, our focus here in Ohio is to look for and report to Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is acronym is ICE. All employers who are hiring illegals, within that scope of looking for illegals, we have individuals within the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps who are Hispanic, Spanish-speaking, and at the same time we gather information to determine the fact that they are, in fact, illegals.
Sometimes that's a surprise to people, isn't it, that there are Hispanics actually in the organization? And
well, we have American-born Spanish-speaking people whose parents came to this country legally, I should say. Their children were born here in the United States. Those people have become citizens, and the same way that my grandfather and others have come to this country legally, which is the reason why we look at this illegal issue mostly from just the perspective of the law itself for the United States of America. But we also look at overcrowding conditions within the cities and communities. For example, we look for housing where there's five or six different vehicles in front of the apartments, in front of houses that are rented. In there's overcrowded conditions. They typically live six or eight within a house, maybe more. These are reported to the city zoning officers for a violation of city code for single-family dwellings, and most times they are asked to vacate or trim down to the size that is normal for that particular established zoning requirement. Some of the other issues that we look at in the state deal with helping the Ohio legislators to deal with the issue of the Ohio Workers Protection Act that they are looking for to watch over in the employers in the state of Ohio to protect the Ohio workers, not to employ illegals. And this is legislation that was introduced in September of this year. It has not come up for a vote at this particular time, but it will be. And we're looking to help sponsor that, help with the sponsorship of that act in Ohio. And
the other states have done that, I think, haven't they?
Well, there are. I know that Georgia recently has a statewide illegal, you know, watching over employment of illegals within their state. Also looking at landlords who are renting to these to the illegals. We can call them undocumented. We can call them illegals. Whatever the case is, that they're still illegals coming into the United States.
I had a student who did a research project. He looked at pending legislation here a little more than a year ago in all 50 states, and some states had like 25, 30, 35 bills dealing with you know, one aspect of illegal immigration or more.
Well,
and the only state at that time that didn't have any was Texas. But I understand now their legislature starts, you probably know they only meet every 2 years, every other year, so they start in January. And there's a whole bunch of bills now that they're going to introduce.
Well, not only that, but they just recently have Farmers Branch, Texas, which has put in the same type of legislature that deals with the Pennsylvania, the city in Pennsylvania.
Yes, Hazleton, right.
In Hazleton, correct. And in other states now, Escondido, California, is also putting that the kinds of legislation in to look at people that actually will rent to illegals. But I guess more than anything, the points that we're trying to look at here is we're actually trying to help the people of Ohio, as far as the Ohio workers, to maintain control of the jobs that are here in Ohio for Americans.
Yeah.
Now, we don't have any issues of legal immigrants who come to the country legally, being processed for citizenship, and that takes time. They're all in a waiting mode. Everyone has to wait their turn. But the biggest thing that really has the, I believe, the U.S. spinning is this amnesty issue and this guest worker program.
Mm-hmm.
We are not looking to support amnesty. We don't believe that the 12 million illegals that they say they have in the United States, which we believe to be more in the ranks of 30 million,
mm-hmm.
And still more coming, we think the greater threat to America is this North American Union, which is what Mexico would like to have. Which
right.
is,
you and I were talking about that, right.
Which is the no-border issue
right.
and the complete transparency of coming and going as you please.
Probably no holds barred crime too.
Well,
if you could
we seem to have a large presence of felons that happen to be within the illegal immigrant makeup, and we have here the issues of local law enforcement not having the power to detain and deport.
Mm-hmm.
This is something that I believe states themselves should be enacting 287G powers, because they need to be trained. Local and state law enforcement must be trained in the methods of detaining and deporting, not just looking to hold on to someone who's committed a felony and then to have them picked up by ICE or the Department of Homeland Security on a federal level and funneled out. The reason why most of these cities like Hazleton and Escondido and Farmers Branch have gone ahead and done what they are doing is because the federal agencies in the United States of America is not performing their job to protect U.S. citizens by upholding the laws of the nation. That's the reason why the Minuteman Civil Defense Corps was established. That's the reason why the Minuteman Project was established and the American Patrol. These groups have SOPs, what they call standard operating procedures. We do not detain. We do not. The only thing that we do is we report the presence of illegals coming into the U.S. To the Border Patrol. And now that we have some National Guard, which is only a minute amount of National Guard that must be put down on the border. We really need somewhere in the neighborhood of 36,000 troops down on the border to actually maintain complete control of the border.
Southern Arizona, their claim is that about 70% of the Part 1 murder, robbery, rape, burglary, arson, larceny, motor vehicle theft, about 70% of those crimes are illegal.
We've seen some statistics on that. We've also seen the statistics that are in L.A. County, which are off the charts.
Right.
I really, really feel bad for L.A. County. It's such a mess out there. I'm not sure exactly what they're going to be able to do, but I do believe that the old adage of the way you eat an elephant is one bite at a time. So
right. You
need to start taking these opportunities of taking these felons and sending them back to Mexico. But the problem that we have with deportation, in my eyes, deals specifically with Mexico not performing the duties necessary of their sovereign nation, which is to protect their borders. And since the only thing that the Mexican officials seem to be doing is encouraging their people to go north for work, when Mexico has some wealth of resources down there, oil and gold and other resources that they could be using to make their country a better place for their citizens, yet they, through corruption and their refusal to do anything, this is the reason why we have all these people showing up at our doorstep. But more than that is they believe that there's going to be amnesty. And at the point at which the U.S. would declare amnesty on the people that live here, how in the world can you ever actually know who's here and when they got here?
The volume of immigrants in such a short period of time is what most people, unless they study this issue, they don't realize it, how many have come.
Right.
Already we have more Mexican illegal immigrants in the United States than we've had of all the past immigrants from five or six other nations.
That's correct.
And how you assimilate that many people and provide services, particularly when they're not working and not making any money, is just an impossibility.
Right. Well, I think that some of the issues that I've brought about would make people think a little bit. But I think more than anything, people need to actually understand that the impact that is happening today is minute compared to what's going to happen if amnesty is declared.
Exactly.
The services that are provided to indigent people because of the hospitals and then any other forms of help to them in forms of subsidies, it's an enormous amount of money now, but it's going to be 3 to 4 to 10 times that if amnesty is declared. Plus, there's other issues of the 14th Amendment for anchor babies and chain migration. So,
tell us what that is. Most people don't know what that is.
Well, anchor babies are foreign-born citizens who come to the United States specifically to have their children here, which at this point they declare them to be U.S. citizens. Yet, if you go through the 14th Amendment, the wording in there does not specifically state foreign-born. It says something to the effect of people who are under the sovereign control of the United States. Well, people who are not under the sovereign control are foreign-born people. Therefore, is the 14th Amendment accurate? We don't think so. We think it needs to be looked at again. For the fact that just because you come to America, which they are coming now by the hundreds of thousands to have children here to declare them U.S. citizens, when that child's old enough, they can ask for the people who are in the other countries remaining, which is called chain migration. So one person would beget 10 to 20 to 30 different people to come to the United States. So these are issues that we also look at. But I guess at this point, I don't want to get too involved in.
Yeah. We'll cover this on another show.
We'll cover this
and
on
maybe you could
on
make
another.
A comment on the kind of folks you're getting and what seems to be their motivation, and then we'll let you go.
Most of the people, we do have a lot of retirees that are involved because they have the time.
Exactly.
We do have younger people who are involved because they are looking at the issue strictly from what it's going to cost them and what it's going to cost their children in the future for this illegal immigration that the United States doesn't seem to be doing anything about. And I think what they're more afraid of is what are the impacts down the road of these 12 million. They say there's 12 million, but there's obviously more than that. So, and mainly because they really don't know who is here. But lately, and for quite some time, if you take a number of 100 illegals who come over the border into the United States, there's a group of 15% of those. So that leaves 85% being of Mexican or Southern, South American extract. But the other 15% are what they call OTMs, other than Mexican, which have amounted to Hezbollah and Al-Qaeda.
Right.
They happen to be Chinese. They happen to be other from other Arab-speaking countries. This is confirmed by patrols that have been down there and have cited these groups.
And our government is probably doing a little secret work in that area and not telling everything, which they shouldn't.
Well, I mean, they can't tell about things that they're doing, but the point is that just recently they've uncovered some Hamas literature and happened to have a shirt that had a patch from a Hamas group down in Texas. And these are the really scary parts about what's going on down at that border. And the normal payment for a Mexican to come into the United States, which is usually by a coyote, who is someone who would lead them through the desert into the United States, is a payment of around $2,000 to $2,500. Many of these
get some false ID and.
Yeah, that along with some information, some of that they provide. But for those people who are too poor, they're the ones that are constricts into having 80 to 90 pounds of marijuana strapped on their back, and that would be their payment for coming into the U.S. to be led here by a coyote or, in this case, drug dealers. So. The
when I was down there, we pulled right up behind coyotes.
Yes.
And Gary Cole would get out and go talk to them. They're not even spooked. As soon as they find out you're not from the Border Patrol,
oh yeah,
nothing to them.
Oh, they don't have issues down there. There are ranchers down in, and since we only deal with Arizona, there are ranchers in Arizona that have had their houses shut up.
Oh yeah.
And livestock killed by the drug gangs that are running drugs into America through Arizona. Even where we were camping down there in the desert, there were issues of drug runners down there. But
people can't imagine it until they see it, can they?
Well, no, they can. And they should spend some time down there talking to the locals and see how much they have to say about what goes on down there. The abuse of the welfare system down in Douglas, Arizona, where I was, is just overwhelming.
Jim, I'll ask you one last question,
right.
And then we'll put a show together.
Okay, I'd love to do that.
Did you get a chance to eat in the Bright Spot?
I'm sorry?
At the Bright Spot restaurant down there, the steakhouse and place. Gary Cole took.
Is it down in
Palominos, I think, is.
No, I think we.
Don't miss that one the next time you're down there.
Well, I'll tell you, Professor, I can tell you what I did eat for 3 days down there, MREs.
Oh, boy.
Meals ready to eat. So, since we spent our time in the desert. So.
Well, Jim, we thank you very much.
Okay.
It's been an absolute delight, and we'll pass along word back to your organization, and you're certainly leading this firm to the website in terms of people who might be interested in becoming members,
right?
Right,
and that website is www.minutemanhq.com. Has a wealth of information in there about what's been going on in the states and in the press, and it might be very helpful to them. Also, I know that you had said that you would show up for our meeting November the 29th in Middletown.
Yeah.
You know, just to let your listeners know and just to let you know that you will have an opportunity to meet Sheriff Jones from Butler County.
He's been a speaker for our graduate students.
Okay, and he's going to be there talking to us at the meeting, which I'm very happy that he has taken our invitation and plans to attend. So,
if you could just get him a little more motivated to deal with this issue, right?
Well, yeah, he's dealing with it on a daily basis, so we're anxious to hear some of his statistics and some things that have been going on in Butler County.
Well, great. We'll talk with you later, and we'll see you on the 29th. Thank you very
much. Great. Thank you so much.
Bye.
And bye now.
Nate, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Oh, gosh. You got a little caught up here in Minuteman stuff, but let's talk about courts.
Okay.
How are you doing?
Oh, great. And yourself?
You got good business up there in the court system?
Oh, yes. It's steady business as usual.
Tell us a little bit about what you do for a living up there and the services that you provide and direct. I looked around your website a little bit tonight and got a little sneak preview, but go ahead and tell us what's going on, and then we'll shift over to this intervention court that that you're working with, which sounds like a really exciting idea.
Yes, and the intervention court is a mental health substance abuse court, and it addresses those that are suffering from a mental illness or substance abuse. What I pretty much do is I do coordinate the efforts through local organizations such as our Firelands Counseling and Recovery Services. They help assist us with our program there. I think I don't know if the question you were asking is what I do before or beside of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Several titles, I noticed.
Okay. I'm also the Director of Court Services, which deals with, you know, various programs such as our community service program, our Reach Our Youth program, our court-appointed special advocate program. And that helps with mentoring.
Yeah, in your spare time, you're also a graduate and undergraduate professor for the university, right?
Yes, yes, I am. It does keep me busy.
what's the germination of the idea of an intervention court? What's normally, is this just juvenile or is this for adult too?
This is actually for juveniles in Huron County. We do not have an adult mental health court right now in Huron County, but we do have an adult drug court.
And I think you were telling me that for mental health courts for juvenile area, there may be only something like 10 to 20 in the whole nation?
Yeah, that is correct. At the time that we were establishing it, we were becoming in October 2003, we were one of the 10 first in the nation.
Oh, boy. Isn't that something? That's something to be proud of. Well, what actually goes on? What, you know, how does it actually work?
You know, as we know, the way to point it out to make the listeners might understand a little more, we're having a problem with prison overcrowdingness, too many people in prison. Mental health is another avenue that can focus on dealing with those suffering from a mental illness, that the mental illness might be causing them to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, there's 130 mental health courts in the nation. Ohio has 30 of them, so we are, you know, up and coming. We're trying to divert, you know, those from prison, have them not to come into prison.
Can you wait till I click on one more person here and we can get involved in the conversation too?
Okay.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello. Who is this?
Professor Haley.
Where are you calling in from, sir?
This is Shan Scott.
Okay, good. What do you, you work in the juvenile court business, don't you?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so you can certainly join our conversation here with Nate Pirani. Nate, go ahead and tell us what happens. What, I mean, how do you end up in the mental health courts? You get involved in what, crime or delinquency? And
yeah, so that's one of the factors, and that's one of the factors that many will argue, well, in order to have assistance with their mental illness, you must commit a crime. And that is one of the oppositions to the mental health court, because you have to commit a crime, otherwise you wouldn't be in there seeing us here in court. But once you do commit a crime...
Let me ask you a question about that. Does that mean that if you're involved in some status type of offense, you wouldn't be eligible for it?
Not necessarily. However, though, with juvenile court and a status offense, with being unruly and actually underage consumption, which is a status offense, some of the sanctions that we could use, we might not be able to use with an unruly or a status offender, such as detention and detaining them. Now,
you need jurisdiction over them to do that, right?
Excuse me?
You need formal court order jurisdiction to deal with them like that, right?
Well, yeah, you do need the formal court order jurisdiction, but you also need to have a delinquent act. Okay. Now, two status offenses, such as two unrollies, can make a violation of a court order, which would make it a delinquent act. In that point, you could detain somebody. However, it depends on the detention facility's stipulations, either state or federal guidelines, if they would accept that juvenile. So to be more successful into the program of sanctions, just, you know, viewing sanctions at this point, mm-hmm. we would need some form of a delinquency act.
Mm-hmm. And how long have you been running this?
Since October 2003 we began.
Oh, boy, you've been at it quite a while.
Yes.
What were some of the – you got to have a judge that's has a little bit of courage and wants to do something about that, right?
Yes, and that was, you know, we're very, very fortunate to have Judge Cardwell here in Huron County, and he was very concerned and realized that, you know, the juveniles that are suffering from a mental illness or substance abuse or actually a co-occurring disorder, you know, do need assistance and they do need help, and we're trying to, you know, help them out as much as we can before they would graduate into the adult system where, you know, they might fall down the ranks and not be noticed and not be assisted.
You're getting a lot of your counseling services from Firelands, is that what you said?
Yes, we do. Firelands is one of our local counseling agencies, and they are very much involved. We do have a case manager. Each juvenile is assigned a case manager that does meet with them and the families, goes into the homes and meets with them, reports to the court. And our court, which is unique to other courts, we actually have a certain date each week and a certain time. We do have a certain docket when we do meet. We meet on Thursdays at 4:00. So that's a current docket, depending on what phase or what level the juvenile is in, every Thursday at 4:00 or whenever they do need to meet at that 4:00 setting.
So there's an update on their case every week then?
Yes, there is a status hearing. We call those a status hearing, and it doesn't mean necessarily you're doing something wrong. You could be having a very good week or good 2 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, whatever your phase calls for, and we would just review the status and court orders and obligations that the juvenile must do and see how they're doing at that status hearing. Mm-hmm. And we also do have a representative from the counseling agency at those hearings, which is very, very helpful in the whole process.
Shannon, anything comparable to that in Franklin County?
Yes. Matter of fact, Mr. Brani, our court, which you probably know here in Franklin County, we do have the drug court. Because I work in the Protective Service Department where we have the reclaims area. They just now did a contract here about a couple months ago with the Children's Hospital for mental health counseling and assessments and things of that nature for the court. As well, I believe drug court, they meet once a week. And now, just recently, they just added the adults to the program as well. So if you're aware of the Franklin County or the juvenile court, but it's pretty much similar to what you were stating about status offenders like your unruly's or school truancies, things of that nature. They have to be a delinquent offender before, you know, they can be held in a detention home, especially with ACA standards. They want the most so-called serious offenders in detention homes. So
yes.
Sound like it's pretty much on the same page with you guys.
Yeah, boy, that sure changed over a couple of decades, didn't it? Used to be you could take a child into custody and just about do whatever you wanted without a crime, just a status offense. And you know, some people have ideas that maybe we missed a little something there. We became so legal in the juvenile court. But on the other hand, there were some really serious abuses also. What were the hardest things in terms of starting this court? Why don't other courts do it, Nate?
I just really think it might be, you know, under the radar a little bit. Not everybody's aware that it actually exists. You know, everybody is aware of drug courts that sweep in the nation and has been for several years now. And everybody is aware that drug courts are out there. I don't believe that everybody's really aware that there are mental health courts out there. I think there is a push with it, and I think it's starting to get out there with the rampant sweep of CIT training for the law enforcement officers, which is our crisis intervention training, and that helps officers realize whenever they may go to arrest a suspect or arrest a person that they may be suffering from a mental illness, and it helps and assists with officers with that form of training. So maybe with that push, we're getting the mental health courts out there.
What have been, can you talk about cases that have been success without names?
Sure. We have had definitely successes in the program, and also we have had those that haven't been successful. I mean, it's more of an individualized basis than an overall number basis, I think, at this early to judge success. But, you know, we've had juveniles that came into the program that may have been in counseling before, have been on probation before, have almost utilized every other service available in the county. This is fairly new. It's a little over 3 years old. They stepped into this program, and we've seen success with them into this program. One of those reasonings being it's a very intensive program. There's intense monitoring, working in with the family, working in with other agencies. And, you know, just the biggest thing is communication. We have communication between all the agencies and the family and the child. And I think if you administer that communication and have a lot of the communication, it'll yield success. And I think that is what we're seeing here in the program.
How many are you handling and how many could you handle?
Right now, since the start of it, it is a 9 to 18-month program. I should first off start by saying that. So it's not an overnight program. It's not a very short program. It is in long duration, and the juveniles know, and so does the family, you're in for the long haul when you step into this program. So up to this point, we have serviced 35 different juveniles and families, and currently we are serving 7 right now. Based upon our population, that is comparable to other counties across the nation. We're a very rural county. We're a small county. I believe our population is, give or take, about 60,000 altogether in the entire county.
And Franklin County is a little bit bigger than that, isn't it?
Just a little bit.
Just a bit.
Along with some illegal immigrants, I think. See things properly in Columbus. Did any of the judges resist this?
Excuse me, kid?
Did any of the judges resist this idea as something that not needed? Or?
Well, actually, here again in Huron County, we only have one judge and one magistrate due to our size, and he was very welcoming of that. And a very neat thing we have in just our little area here, we have a good collaboration with the surrounding counties. Seneca County contributed greatly to us starting our program. We have worked with Ottawa County, Sandusky County, and we still meet to this day. Probably every 3 months, our four counties do get together. We discuss how things have been going, what changes are working. Is there any suggestions we have? So here in, you know, the small part of northern Ohio, we're working together in our own little collaborative effort in trying to spread that.
Are guardian ad litems ever involved in this too?
Not in the mental health court. We try. They can be, but in our case, they haven't. You know, usually if you would have a child that might be in a foster home removed from the family, a guardian ad litem might be put in place for the betterment or the help to help the child. But we really just stick with the families, and we haven't had any in this case. Not to say that there couldn't be, but we just haven't.
And it sounds like when you start something out like this, a county your size is probably the right size. Because if you try to do something in this in, you know, larger communities, Shannon, am I correct? Usually you just get swamped with, you know, clients, and it almost kills something from the start. But it sounds like you went at this at a good pace, and it worked out for you.
Yeah, and we did. We didn't rush into it. We went into it on a slow pace. And I just think, as you indicated, you know, the size of our county, juveniles are coming in weekly, seeing the judge, speaking to the judge. We do it similar. We bring everybody in, similar to traffic courts, which would be an open format, which is very, very unusual in juvenile court.
Oh, yes.
So there's accountability between all the participants as well.
Oh, did you get resistance for that idea?
Well, actually, they have. No, we haven't. The parents as well as the child sign off on this, onto our contract, and they know that there's going to be other juveniles, other participants, and their families in the courtroom at the same time when their case is called.
I mean, could somebody, like, Could a student or visitors come up and sit in court and watch that?
No, it's only for the participants and the families. It's not open as that aspect as a traffic court would be, or a dependency neglect abuse case in juvenile court where anybody off the street could walk into those hearings.
Yeah. That's the same way in Franklin County, isn't it? There's still closed hearings?
Yes, pretty much open for, like Mr. Prime said, for the A&D cases, anybody can pretty much walk in. Now, Mr. Brown, I do got a question for you. Now, are these kids on probation?
Yes, they are adjudicated. We are a post adjudication court. Now, there's a lot of mental health courts and drug courts that are around the country as well as the state that they will hold off adjudication as almost a reward for completion. But we are a post adjudication court.
Okay, and what? As far as severity cases, do you guys think, I mean, are these misdemeanor cases, are they felony cases, or a little bit of both?
We do have a little bit of both, and we try to prevent, you know, the serious violent offenses, sex offenders. We do not like into the program, but we do have had felonies, and we currently have those with felonies in the program right now.
What kind of felonies? Your garden variety felony, or?
You know, it does vary. We've had... I'm trying to think of a current case that we do have in here for a felony. It was an attempted robbery we do have in here right now. So that is a very serious felony.
Anyone happen to see today that made me think of the video that was on a couple of the news sites where the guy comes in the convenience store in Florida, and a man pays his bill and walks out, and this guy comes up in a sweatshirt, and he pulls out a machete to attack the clerk with. And starts working on the register, and guess what she does? She reaches under the counter and pulls out a machete.
Oh, geez.
Draw your swords and go to it. When he saw that, he took off and went out the door. But that's a little unusual occurrence. I guess you bring a machete to a machete fight, right? But that's unusual. Well, what do you think the prognosis is for these around the country, Nate?
Hopefully they're growing. As I stated, Ohio seems to be almost, you know, leading the way. If you look at, there's 130 in the nation, I did believe I stated, and there's 30 here in Ohio.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, I think it is useful, because if you would look at it, I think in the state of Ohio, it costs $60 a day to house an inmate in prison, whereas if they would be involved in mental health court, it would cost $30 a day. So, you know, there is savings in money right there to look at.
I've never mentioned that.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
One of the positive features about this is you've got the Firelands Counseling Services right there. Is that other people would be at a disadvantage?
Yeah, we do have that, but, you know, other counties may have that here locally. They also might have other counseling agencies that will be willing to participate in that. So hopefully that wouldn't be the holdup there, because most of the juveniles and even adults would probably be receiving services from those agencies anyway, so to step it in here with the court and have a collaborative effort, you know, I believe and, you know, I'm hopeful that that's possible not only here but elsewhere.
Well, you can't have a conversation about probation and juvenile court without asking the question about caseloads, and I'll ask that of you and Shannon. What a probation officer, juvenile probation officer in your county, how many people are they working with at one time?
Oh, on an average, it is 50.
50. Okay, that's manageable. I've heard much worse.
Yes.
What is it like in Franklin County?
Well, Franklin County, I know a lot of individuals are carrying over 100. I mean, it's unbelievable. They're even talking about maybe trying to expand out as far as probation officers. There's just so many. I mean, we're seeing kids. So, I'm sorry.
I don't know if anybody's ever traced this, but I think Marin County. California and San Francisco, they decided to come up with non-reporting probation after their caseloads got up over 500 and 600.
Oh my goodness! Well, I know what I know. As far as our preliminary docket, I mean, we're hearing about 600 to 800 cases per month.
Is that?
I mean, it's unbelievable.
Yeah. Well, Nate, what's the best thing that you know about these courts?
I really, you know, after you see somebody that does complete the program that does not come back into the program and has a sense of accomplishing something, you know, just saying that, I think that's personally, you know, a great personal goal in just seeing that. We do like to see that. We do appreciate them doing that in the time and effort. And to notice a change from the beginning to the end of that, I think, makes it worthwhile. And if it's something they can learn and manage and carry on for the rest of their lives, and if there's any tools that they've learned within this program, hopefully that'll help reduce recidivism.
Here, as we get near the end, let me ask you a quick question about the mean age. What would it be? Would it be, are these usually older juveniles, or?
And we've seen more success with the younger crowd as opposed to the 17 almost turning 18. So, you know, our mean age is around 15 and a half, and we think that between 14 and 15 are probably the two best age groups for success in this program.
Well, look, you know, it says on my switchboard here that the next show starts in 8,578 minutes.
is that Wednesday or the Thursday show?
Yeah, it's the Wednesday show, right? The next Wednesday show. It's nice that they keep track of it that accurately, isn't it? But well, Nate, I want to thank you very much for telling us about this, and I hope people pay attention and support the intervention type of court or mental health court. I guess the name is, are the names interchangeable?
Yes, I mean, ours is an intervention court because it's a dual diagnosis court.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's specifically drug courts or mental health courts, but we call it an intervention court due to the dual diagnosis of the court.
I see. Well, look, we thank you very much, and you know the show's archived if you want to play it for somebody else in terms of, you know, a class or maybe an online class or something like that. You can play just, you know, your part. Shannon, I had an idea for you on surveillance cameras. Shannon is the author of one of the articles in our Strange But Real book, and he's made a real study of surveillance cameras, police surveillance cameras. And I have a new idea, Shannon. How do you like this one? How about surveillance cameras? Minneapolis is, or St. Paul is going to install cameras that have the shot spot on them where they can detect gunfire, right?
Uh-huh.
Okay, I have a better idea. How about surveillance cameras with tasers?
Unbelievable.
No,
unbelievable.
Not doing that yet.
Remember, that's up and coming.
You know, that's
get away from there if you don't do it, zap.
Well, I have a, Professor, I have a better one than that, or just as good. Chicago, New York, or the Sun-Times there report that the police department are on board with this scanning plates. I don't know if you've seen that or
yes,
not.
Uh-huh. Right.
I mean, yeah. I mean, these cameras, you could be on either side of the vehicle, and they can scan up to 3,600 parked or moving vehicles an hour.
Wow.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Well, look, folks, Audrey is, again, signaling that it's time to end the show, and I would hate to go beyond what she tells me to do. So we have to contend with her, and she certainly does a wonderful job on the show. So, Nate, I want to thank you for joining us tonight, and everyone else that's a listener. Shannon, thank you very much.
And, oh, thanks for having me.
Thank
tonight,
you.
Tonight, and be careful and keep learning, and we'll see you next week, hopefully, on the show. And remember, it's on a Wednesday. Good night, everybody.
Take care.
I was told in my along the dark sea. Well, along came a Sam Michael with a high-end canvas covered load. If you're going to win a muckamack with me, you can ride. So I climbed into the cab and I settled down to the side. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand.